I'm joined by Dr. Emmett O'Connor. He's written a new book on one of the famous figures in Irish history, Big Jim Larkin. Emmett O'Connor, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for joining us today. In your book, you're asking if Larkin is a hero or a wrecker. A wrecker, excuse me. Explain more.
Yeah, Larkin, I suppose, is remembered as a hero because he had his glorious years between 1907, when he arrived in Ireland first, and the 1913 lockout. But people generally don't know, I think, what happened to Larkin afterwards, and his subsequent career wasn't so great. He had his ups and downs, and certainly in the 1920s, when he came back from America, you know, he did a certain amount of damage to the labour movement at that time.
Okay, and we'll talk about that in a second, but going back to that period, I suppose, where people think of him, the lockout in 1913 being the most famous part of all of that. I wonder, in a little way, if Larkin is sometimes a little bit overlooked when we look back at that era in Irish history. It's a few years before the Rising and the Civil War that followed that, and that became obviously such a huge moment in terms of shaping Ireland for decades and for generations to come. But Larkin's influence in Dublin in around 1910 and a couple of years either side of that, it's very difficult to overstate it.
Yeah, he was hugely important. You know, we talk about the national revival and so on, and we tend to think of the kind of four pillars of the national revival as the formation of the GAA, the Gaelic League, the Abbey Theatre, and Sinn Féin. But the formation of the Irish Transport and General Workers Union in 1909 was really a fifth pillar, because Irish unions had been retreating into British unions and disappearing into the British labour movement almost since the Great Famine, and Larkin reversed that, and he formed the basis of the modern Irish labour movement. And he was also a very strong Irish Irelander. He was every bit as Republican as James Connolly was, but this tends to be forgotten because it created such a lot of friction within the labour movement in the mid 20th century. There was a lot of disputes between British unions and Irish unions. So it's a lot more convenient for Labour to remember Larkin as a great trade unionist rather than as a Republican and as an Irish Irelander.
And how great of a trade unionist was he?
Well, certainly during the glory days, he was outstanding. I mean, he revolutionised trade unionism. And the extraordinary thing was that he could take workers who were low paid, they were easily replaced, they were very insecure, and he could turn that into solidarity. You know, the more insecure they were, the more determined and the more militant they became. And it was Larkin who had that kind of magic almost that nobody else had, that he was able to completely turn a situation around.
But was it the case that exploiting, maybe a strong term, but was he exploiting the fact that those workers were so badly paid and working in such poor conditions? You know, the impression one gets from that time is that the general populace and the general workforce were looking for a figure to rally around, and perhaps eventually it would have been someone.
Yeah, they were, but I mean, there was nobody really who could match Larkin, you know, as an orator, as an agitator, as a leader. And he was able to do it, and he said himself, you know, I'm often accused of being a dictator, but I'm really, you know, the servant of the people. And he was both. I mean, like a lot of dictators, I mean, Daniel O'Connell was a terrible demagogue who had to, you know, he had to dominate any organization that he was in. He loved the adulation of the people. I think if people have that great gift of oratory, that great ability to move people, you know, they do get hooked on it, and in many ways it becomes their life.
The 1913 lockout was commemorated a couple of years ago around the time of its centenary. Looking back on it, just how pivotal a moment is it for workers' rights in this country? Was there a legacy that came from it rather than just the lockout and the event itself?
Yeah, it became sort of the foundation myth of the labour movement. At the time, of course, it was a defeat. I mean, it was a material defeat for the Irish Transport and General Workers' Union. But it was turned into a sort of a moral victory, and you know, Larkin certainly won the propaganda war over William Martin Murphy and the employers.
But did that moral victory have much of an impact on Larkin himself? I mean, your book, and we'll talk about it very shortly, goes on to talk an awful lot about what happened to Larkin himself post the lockout. You know, he. his time in the trade union movement didn't quite come to an end in 1913, but you know, it effectively did in many ways, and his influence, when you look back through history, seems to have been greatly diminished after that point, even though he lived for many long years to come.
Yeah, I think it was a turning point for him personally, because he always personalised everything, and he personalised the struggle into a kind of a gladiatorial single combat between himself and William Martin Murphy. And he threw everything into the struggle, and he was completely worn out after it. I think he was under stress even before the lockout, but after the lockout, he was really, I think, in a very difficult, mentally he was in a difficult condition. He had to see doctors to deal with depression and so on. So there was a general feeling, I think, that a rest would do him good. And he was thinking to himself of going to the United States and maybe other countries as well, and sort of going on the lecture circuit. And people thought that it'd be a good idea if he got away and got a bit of rest and recuperation, and he might return then after a few weeks or a few months at most. But instead, he ended up staying in America for 9 years. He didn't come back until April of 1923.
And what did he do there? Was he able to become a figure of note stateside too?
He was, but in Ireland he was the main man in the labour movement, whereas in America he was just another orator, he was just another agitator, and people in America wondered what he was doing there. You know, they said, why is he here, sort of working with working on the margins in some ways, when he could be leading his people at home. He also got a bit tired of America, and he says that he was trying to get back to Ireland from about 1917, and he did make 11 applications to the British consulate in New York for a passport, but they wouldn't give him a passport. But it was common enough for labour leaders at the time to sort of move around the world as stowaways. If they had contacts on the docks, they could be smuggled onto a ship. And of course, it would be very easy for Larkin to do that, and yet he didn't take that option.
Do we know why? Are you suggesting that he never really wanted to come back?
Yeah, I think he was kind of in two minds about it, because in some ways he was tired of America, but in some ways he liked the kind of lifestyle that he had there. You know, he could kind of do what he wanted, and he could come and go as he pleased, and he spent a lot of time living in Greenwich Village, and he liked hanging out in that kind of bohemian sort of set, you know. And he was mixing with some sort of top people on the American left. He was working with John Reed, for example, who wrote 10 Days That Shook the World, and Hollywood later made a film about it called Reds, with Warren Beatty playing the part of John Reed. So, you know, it certainly had its attractions, I think, for somebody like Larkin, who wanted to be a free spirit and come and go as he pleased and do what he wanted when he wanted, not have to answer to anyone for that.
He was also, you say, working as a secret agent for the Germans during this time. I don't know how widely known that was up until this point.
Yeah, something that's been kind of covered up, I think. He didn't really want trade union work when he went to America. I mean, you could argue he didn't really want it after the lockout. And he tried to make a go of it on the lecture circuit, and he wasn't able to do that as efficiently as he liked. He was able to attract big audiences, okay, to his lectures, but he couldn't seem to make money out of it. So he took a job as an organizer with the Western Federation of Miners, which was it was a rough, tough job, and it wasn't the sort of thing that he wanted anyway. So in desperation, he got John Devoy, who was head of Clonagale, the American wing of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, to contact the German embassy, and he offered to become a sort of, in effect, a German agent who would organize strikes in munitions factories and so on, and conduct anti-war propaganda in return for generous subvention from the Germans. Because the position of America at this time was that it was neutral. It wasn't in World War One, but the British had blockaded Germany, so it was impossible for the American industry to trade with Germany. So all of American industry was really on the side of Britain and France in the war. Mm. And this is a very frustrating situation for the Germans.
Okay, and you say this has in some ways been swept under the carpet, this fact.
Yeah, I think so. I think Larkin's whole career after the lockout, because it didn't reflect too well on him in some ways, I think has been kind of brushed under the carpet, because the Liverpool wanted to preserve him as a hero, and in particular to preserve him as the hero of 1913. And, you know, the answer to that problem was simply to concentrate on the lockout, and, you know, and just make Larkin the sort of the great leader of the risen people in the lockout.
And is it this fact then that gives you the title of your book, Hero or Wrecker? Is this what you're referring to in the second part of that?
Yeah, what I'm saying is, I mean, you have to take Larkin in the round. I mean, you know, you got to look at what he did after 1913. You can't pretend that his life ended there. And you have to look as well at what he did when he came back to Ireland in 1923. And he caused a lot of trouble within the trade union movement. He split the Irish Transport and General Workers Union because he wanted his old union back. You know, as far as he was concerned, he had founded the ITGW. It was his union. And he couldn't stomach the idea of other people running his union. He had a lot of character flaws, and he had a terrible problem with jealousy. And the others weren't just going to move aside and let him take over in his old dictatorial way. They're willing to work with him, but they weren't willing to be dominated by them. But that wasn't enough for Larkin.
Do you think that if they had been a bit more open to allowing him to come back into the fold, that history and the labour movement here could have turned out differently? Had he more of a role to play that he was never given the chance to do so?
Well, I think I think they were willing to work with him, but I don't think he was willing to work with them. But if he had been willing to accept, I mean, what was proposed was to create a kind of five-man collective leadership of the union. So Larkin would have been one of those five figures leading the union. If Larkin would be willing to accept that, things would have turned out a lot better for the labour movement, because the split in the transport union in 1923 created a virtual civil war in trade unionism, you know, which lasted into the 1950s anyway.
Okay. The book is by Dr. Emmett O'Connor of the University of Ulster. It's Jim Larkin, Hero or Wrecker. Big Jim Larkin, Hero or Wrecker. And Emmett, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Cheers, no problem at all.